Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
And good morning on Sports360AZ.com and AZ Central Sports, filling in for Brad Sesmat today on the Brad Sesmat Show. My name is Jared Cohen. Going to be joined in a little bit by Jason Jewell of Scout.com. He'll be with us for most of the show. Coming up later, we will have Greg Biggins, also from Scout.com, to talk some national recruiting, as well as how U of A, ASU, and the perception of Arizona high school prospects around the country. We'll talk about that with Greg Biggins. And then, at the end of the broadcast today, we have Charlie Regal, the former Chaparral High School football coach, now special teams and tight ends coach over at the University of Arizona. They're in the New Mexico Bowl this weekend, so we'll catch up with Coach Regal coming up here. But first, I'm going to bring in Eric Sorensen. Now, Eric, I was off for a week.
Welcome back, by the way.
Yeah, I haven't taken full weeks off very much since we've been on this journey. So
we're really not allowed to take full weeks off because we're such a small staff, but it tis the season for vacation. I get it.
Tis the season. So I did.
Well deserved, by the way.
It just seemed like a lot happened while I was gone conveniently, you know? Mm-hmm. Right before I left, Zach Greinke was brought on board. They made it official on Friday, and let's kind of start there with the Diamondbacks first, because you were there when Greinke was introduced, and I'd love to get your perspective on what was said, what were some of the reaction, and kind of the vibe around Chase Field when he was brought in, because we posed the question right after the sign happened with me, you, and Brad, that this is probably the biggest sign the Diamondbacks have had since Randy Johnson.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I went down there. The game plan was, I believe the press conference was at 11, and Brad and I talked about getting down there, me setting up the camera. I was down there at 9:45. There are already four or five cameras set up in the camera well. By the time the press conference started, we had people standing against the sidewalls.
So they did it in that small media room.
They did. They did it downstairs, just across the hallway of the clubhouse, if you're familiar with Chase Field. You probably aren't, but we're lucky enough to be down there from time to time.
Sure.
So he is going to be, as I told Brad, the silent assassin. He is not going to be the outgoing, Curt Schilling, gregarious, see him all over SportsCenter. He's quiet. He's reserved. He doesn't like the spotlight. After the press conference ended, he had his wife and their young baby, and the Diamondbacks put him against the Diamondback backdrop, and a couple of the PR people were taking pictures on their phone. A couple of the other camera people came up, and he said, "No cameras, please, no cameras, please." Like, he just does not like the spotlight.
Yeah, and
when he's on the mound, he likes the spotlight, but away from it, he is just not he's not real he's just not in the interviews, and that's totally fine.
I think that dynamic is going to be good for this team because Paul Goldschmidt isn't
same
a fan
way.
Either.
Paul
Goldschmidt will indulge you, mm-hmm. but he is the same way. And I think that that's going to carry on kind of the demeanor of this team that is shaping to be a very good one in the NL West. And on top of it, so that was exciting news. I left town just in time to hear of the Shelby Miller trade. And I know there's been a lot of people that have been for and against it. I am one of those that stand on the side of being adamantly against it. I have nothing against Shelby Miller. I think he's a good pitcher. He's a former top prospect in the Cardinals organization.
Yep.
We know what top prospects out of that organization have turned into. But they dealt him to Atlanta. And he had a very good year for Atlanta last season, despite some poor run support, to say the least. But let's think about what the Atlanta Braves have gotten from the Arizona Diamondbacks in 2 years. They have now gotten three out of the last four, because they've had four first-round picks in the last 3 years. The Braves now own three of them, one of them happening to be the top overall pick in last year's draft in Dansby Swanson. Now, I saw one argument that last year's draft was down. There wasn't a clear-cut number one, so losing Swanson isn't quite as bad as some of the other guys in the past. I happen to look at it differently. There were so many guys that were number one overall capable. It just depended on where you wanted to go. And the Diamondbacks decided to go Dansby Swanson. They also trade Aaron Blair, who was the pitcher of the year in their organization last year, who has been out pitching Braden Shipley, who was their first round pick that year, because Shipley and Blair were both drafted in the first round. He was a compensatory pick. But Blair has outshone Shipley And it was the pitcher of the year last year. And plus, you then last year, to get rid of a Royals contract, you traded Touki Toussaint,
yep,
who is supposed to be a star in the making, but extremely young and a project. Now, I get where they're coming from, and they're trying to win now. But there's a fine line that you walk between mortgaging your future and trying to win now.
And look at what's happened in the National League West with pitching. I mean, yeah, the Diamondbacks definitely enhanced and improved their starters, and it hurt the Dodgers getting Greinke to Arizona. But what the Giants did yesterday, I mean, yes, there's just everyone, it's going to be an arms race in the NL West. You're going to have a lot of 2-hour and 35-minute games because the division is loaded with starters, especially at the top end.
And that's clearly what all the teams are doing. That's clearly what they believe is the recipe to win in the NL West. The Cueto sign was huge. A lot of people made a big deal about Jeff Samardzija going to the Giants. His fly ball rate last year, I don't have the number in front of me. I only know this because he was on a certain fantasy baseball team last year. But his fly ball rate was so poor last year with the Chicago White Sox. Imagine that in Chase Field and Dodger Stadium and Coors Field. You know, I didn't love that sign for them, but bringing in Cueto, that's a different ballgame. Let's switch gears now to the Phoenix Suns, and they've won 4 out of their last 5. It's been a breath of fresh air. I watched a lot of their game against Minnesota the other day because the Cardinals weren't playing on Sunday, so it gave a great opportunity to watch the Suns. And a talented Minnesota Timberwolves team who's going to be fantastic in years to come. But yet again, Markieff Morris not playing. And I believe it's 4 games in a row now, Eric, that he has not played. So he basically hasn't played a game since I left and got back.
Yep.
And it just seems like it's only a matter of time. I know the big thing was today, December 15th, is the first day players that were new acquisitions to teams can be dealt in the NBA. So say a guy that was just signed, let's see, say Tyson Chandler was signed by the Suns. The first day, if the Suns wanted to trade him, which they won't, is today. So I think that opens up a lot of new possibilities via trade partners for the Suns. So this could happen any day now. But the team happens to be winning with him not on the floor. A guy named Corey Jefferson, a guy named Miroslav Teletovic, and
thank
John
you for
Lure.
Saying that name. Yep.
Yeah, mm-hmm. John Lure. Like, these are guys coming in and playing well, and they're winning games without him on the court. Now, are you going to make the playoffs and make a push in the playoffs with those guys? You know, I don't know. An elite Markieff Morris or a top of his game Markieff Morris might be better suited for a playoff run, but this team seems to be more sync and have more chemistry around them with him not on the court, and it's just only a matter of days.
Well, and Morris really backed the Suns into a corner. I mean, he said he was unhappy. The Suns tried to play nice. The two sides, you remember Media Day. I mean, Markieff saying how, quote, I'm excited to be here, ready to turn the page. Clearly, that was never the case. And now the Suns are probably going to have to dump him and not get near the return in value. You watch. They're going to trade Markieff Morris. He's going to go somewhere where he's happy, and he's going to blow up and put up great stats, and the Suns are going to have to walk away with their tail between their legs. But what are you going to do? Like you said, are you just going to keep him on the bench the whole season? No. If he's a cancer, you have to get rid of him. And like, there is more chemistry on the court right now with him sitting on the bench.
Now, I don't know what happened behind the scenes. I'm not down there. I wasn't. No one's being told what was actually said to Markieff Morris from Coach Jeff Hornacek or Ryan McDonough. But I feel like it's a combination of, tell you what, your play is obviously, it's not working out. You are the least efficient basketball player on the court for us by far, because Ryan McDonough is Mr. Analytics. Jeff Hornacek's coaching to keep a job. So if he's going to have a guy that's not playing well or, frankly, throwing in the towel each and every night, he can't afford to have those guys on the court. So I'm wondering if there was an agreement made, because he doesn't seem to be saying much and he seems to be having a hunky-dory personality on the sidelines. You know, when Teletovic hits the game winner against Chicago last week, or they get the W and you see him on the bench smiling, clearly he knows the trade's coming and he's happy. So they've made an agreement that you're going to go quietly into the night and you're not going to cause problems and we'll get you out of here. I feel like that's how things have gone on downtown in Phoenix.
Very possible.
And because of it, we're not seeing a whole bunch of drama. The only results of it that we're seeing is the fact that he is not getting onto the court each and every night. Anything else I missed from last? Kyle Allen leaving Texas A&M?
Yeah, Kyle Allen is on the move.
We'll talk about that a little bit more possibly with Jason.
The Cardinals are still red hot. I'm sure
the Cardinals red hot.
Great win. Another Sunday night game this weekend in Philly.
Yeah, another flexed game, too. Means NBC likes what they see in high demand. So it's good stuff. So we're going to switch gears now. That was a lot more of the professional ranks. We're going to talk a lot more college, high school, recruiting here for the rest of the show. We're going to be joined in a few, in about, 20 minutes by Greg Biggins, a FoxSports.com scout, national writer, plus Charlie Regal, the tight end and special teams coach, former Chaparral coach over at U of A. But first, Jason Jewell will be joining us here. Him and I will tandem this show from here on out, so we'll bring him in next segment. And we'll talk about a couple players dismissed from Arizona State last night. That news story came down from scout.com, so we'll get into that. And Jason has some experience being a coach as well at the college level of football, so we'll get his perspective on something like that coming down. Again, I'm Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad Sesmat today on the Brad Sesmat Show on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. It's the Brad Sesmat Show on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. I'm Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad today, and I bring in my co-host for the day, Jason Jewell. You can check out what we do each and every week on Sports 360 AZ, the recruiting roundup, all Arizona high school football recruiting news. We'll have the new one coming up here later on today. But Jason, you coming in, it's an opportunity to go a little bit more in-depth recruiting, perspective of a college coach. You're a offensive line coach over at Glendale Community College. Your nose deep recruiting and college football, that's your life, and the relationships that you fostered and the experiences that you've had. So it'll be fun to pick your brain today on a lot of different topics. The one that's buzzing right now happens to be coming down from Arizona State, as the news came down. And your colleague over at scout.com had a piece about it late last night, Chris Cartman of the Sun Devil Source. ASU, two players dismissed on burglary charges. They were booked in the Maricopa County Sheriff's Office on Sunday. It was shortly after the team's banquet, but Jamie Otemiwo and Deontay Reynolds, two players that did not play this year, one lower on the depth chart, another one was redshirting because he academically was not ready, and they ended up giving him a red shirt based on being a JUCO transfer. So they had to get his grades in order. But Jason, you look at a situation like this where student athletes get into trouble and they are immediately dismissed. And you could look at this from all sorts of different angles. Outside of just talking about how Todd Graham has handled this, what is your perspective being a someone who communicates often with ASU's program, someone that contacts recruits that go into that program, how they're handling it and how this impacts their recruiting?
Well, I think basically Todd Graham and suspending the two young men, I mean, his hand is forced when it comes down to recruiting. You know, in this day and age, there's always going to be guys that are going to be out there and negative, recruit. So, you got to believe that, the U of A guys or Oregon State guys are going to say, hey, look at these ASU guys, they're thugs. And it forces Todd Graham to say, I'm going to suspend these guys. And he's doing the right thing. But, there's negative recruiting that goes on, in this whole deal. And these student athletes, they need to understand that the program is bigger than the individual. So, I played Division I football. And when I was my head coach, Tony Samuel, he now coaches at Georgia State. But he would always tell us that no matter what happens, the headline is always going to be, I played at New Mexico State. New Mexico State student football player arrested. New Mexico State football player, whatever it may be.
And in this case, it says ASU players dismissed.
Exactly.
Two ASU players arrested. So you're right.
And then when I saw this story, this morning when I was scrolling through Twitter, just all, everybody does when they wake up in the morning, checking the news feeds, and I'd never heard of either one of these players. But the headline was ASU football players arrested for burglary.
Now, from your perspective and your coaching background, you think about what Todd Graham had to dismiss a couple guys and players that he brought in that were on scholarship. How does a coaching staff deal with this? How do they set the tone with the rest of the program that using these guys as an example, how do they come in and make up for players that were on scholarship? What are some of the things that go on behind the scenes? Because it's a lot more gray than the black and white of here are two players that got arrested and now they're gone.
The foundation is laid basically in recruiting. It's up to the coaching staff to do their homework to try to not find players that are going to get in trouble and make the program look bad. But, you know, it's not Todd Graham's fault that these players went out and did this. You know, you're a father, Jared. You know, so if your daughter goes to the babysitter and she punches the boy in the face, is it the babysitter's fault? You know, it's the parents' fault. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's not Todd Graham. In this case, Todd Graham is more of the glorified babysitter in this point. So it's the parents' fault and how these kids are raised, but it's the coaching staff's responsibility to bring in student athletes that are not going to make the program look bad.
So Jason, you've dealt with I'm sure the highs and lows of being a college coach. And I'm sure you've dealt with some great things, like seeing players go off to SEC schools and Pac-12 schools and go off to have fantastic careers, even onto the pros. But you've also seen the negative sides of it. In your experience, because your experience with dealing with, you know, kids that get in trouble goes beyond your coaching. You were in juvenile detention centers before you started your football and scout recruiting career. How do kids like this bounce back? What are the type of atmospheres that these kids need to be in or thrusted into to where they just don't go down the tube once they're dismissed from a college football program?
You know, a lot of times college coaches will take a risk on a chance on a player that might have some, you know, at-risk traits, and their hope is that their program is so strong that those players will kind of be forced to change and modify their behavior. They're going to go along with the good kids. But in my experience as a coach, I don't know how any other way to put it, but the turds kind of go with the turds. They find a way to they hang out with each other, and that's kind of what obviously is what's happened. And in this day and age, it's tough because there was more than just these two players, not necessarily involved, but knew what was going on. And in this day and age, where kids are scared to tell other kids, stop. You know, and when I'm coaching now, it's tough for a player, even the team captains, to say, hey man, stop screwing around during stretch. We need to get this right if we want to win on a Saturday. And, you know, it's tougher and tougher for peers to do that for whatever reason. And the coach, it always ends up leaning heavy on the coaches doing this. But again, I think there was other players that knew what was going on. And like I said, in just this day and age, I think more players need to step up and intervene and get kids to do the right thing.
That's Jason Jewell. He's from Scout.com. I'm Jared Cohen, filling in for Brad Sesmat today on the Brad Sesmat Show here on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. Let's switch gears into another big recruiting story that has happened. And it's a player that we talked about at length and ad nauseum for years in Kyle Allen, the number one quarterback in the country out of Desert Mountain High School. He goes off to Texas A&M. He gets burned as a true freshman. He played a lot as a sophomore, and now he's leaving. Now, from your perspective, when you saw this news, what goes through your mind, and what are some of your, what does your gut tell you on the type of direction, maybe not specific schools, or if you have them, specific schools, but what does your gut tell you to where Kyle Allen is headed and what you see for the rest of his college career?
You know, when I saw that Kyle tweeted the news that he was leaving, you know, I was pretty surprised, honestly. The kid's been a starter and a significant contributor the last 2 years, in his first 2 years of college football, at a very high level. You know, he played at Texas A&M. He's playing in the SEC. It's the best college football in the country. So I was a little surprised that he announced that he was leaving. You know, there was that turmoil this year with him and Kyler Murray going back and forth, and I know there was some pressure, you know, from Kevin Sumlin to play Murray because he was so highly regarded and a Texas guy. But, I was shocked.
Now, what do you see for him? What going forward do you see for Kyle Allen? What type of systems do you think he thrives in?
Well, I think he's more of a pocket passer. He's not a dual threat kind of guy. Even though I don't think he's a great athlete, but he's not a bad athlete.
He can run. Yeah, if you need him to, he can run.
Yeah, he's more of a pocket passer. Now, I guess the options for him, you know, in leaving, he could transfer down to an FCS level program and play immediately, but that's not what the word is. You know, because he played as a true freshman, he has a redshirt available. So, you know, he can go to a school and play, basically have 3 years left to play two of them. He'll redshirt this next year, mandatory set out by the NCAA. There's been schools all over the map that been rumored to, for Kyle's services. But the one that I've heard that people have told me that kind of sticks out is Oklahoma, where his old Desert Mountain teammate, Mark Andrews, you know, is playing now. That one I heard is a very strong possibility.
Kyle Allen is the type of player. He's very well spoken. He's always said the right things, done the right things. Is this the type of player? He was on a out of Arizona and out of Desert Mountain. He was the type of guy that was, you know, on a crash course. You know, this could be a next level quarterback. He's got the skill set. Everyone, you know, the Trent Dilfers of the world and everyone around the Elite 11 saying he has all the intangibles. Does something like this really hurt you when you look at where you could end up from a draft perspective? Or is something like this good for him because maybe he sees the writing on the wall that we don't know about to where he needs to find himself a better opportunity to make himself next level ready?
You know, Kyle really hasn't spoken too much. He hasn't gone on a record really and had a big interview on why he's leaving. So we don't know. Maybe he's unhappy. You know, maybe he's there and miserable. I went through that situation. I was actually at Northwestern University and I transferred. So I've been there, kind of done that. So we don't know that. We don't know. Everyone just assumes it was the football aspect part of this is why he was transferred. Maybe he wants to be closer to home. You know, we really don't know this. It's kind of just speculation. But when you get to, you know, talking about potentially NFL, because he was such a highly regarded quarterback, this isn't going to affect anything later on. Obviously, it would if it gets to that point where he's at the combine and that stuff, it would come up in a conversation with these coaches. But I don't think it hurts him, especially because it's 3 years down the road if it were to happen for Kyle.
No question. Last one talking about Kyle, but not necessarily him. For example, Texas A&M has owned Arizona. Kevin Sumlin has owned Arizona. Quaylen Cunningham, the same year as Kyle Allen. Christian Kirk has gone out there, has been an absolute star. Priest Willis, who was at UCLA, transferred from UCLA to Texas A&M. And Texas A&M is still in on Byron Murphy, who they could land. That's the top undecided player left here in the 2016 class. What does something like this, how does something like this affect Sumlin's rapport with Arizona? Does it affect it at all? Does it kind of look like, oh, well, Kyle, you know, we look up to Kyle and he wanted to leave. You know, does it impact it at all, or is there something to that?
I think there's some impact in the whole deal because, you know, you look at all of these kids, they all know each other. You know, they're all buddies. But is it going to be a huge factor? I don't think so, because you look at it, every program has players that transfer. It just happens. So is Texas A&M's pipeline to Arizona going to stop all of a sudden because Kyle Allen is leaving? I don't think so. You know, they're still in it for Byron Murphy, you know, and I've heard that it's down to Washington and Texas A&M, the two favorites for Byron Murphy, the talented wide receiver corner out of Saguaro. But I think someone was still here. He was here last week watching Byron play basketball. He's not going to stop. He's done a good job of stealing the prospects in the state and going after and landing them. And those kids have had success. We see, obviously, Kyle being a starter. You know, Christian Kirk having a phenomenal true freshman season. So these and Quaylen Cunningham contributing in a great way for them. So they're going to keep coming here if they can keep getting players of that caliber.
That's Jason Jewell. He's from scout.com. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad Sesmat today on the Brad Sesmat Show. Coming up next, Greg Biggins, foxsports.com, scout national recruiting analyst. He'll check in. A lot of news around ASU. They're in for the top running back in the nation. U of A's class too, we'll talk about. And then what does he think of Arizona as a whole from a recruiting standpoint? We'll get all that into that with Greg. That's coming up next on the Brad Sesmat Show on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. It's the Brad Sesmat Show on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. I'm Jared Cohen filling in for Brad today, also joined here by Jason Jewell of Scout.com, and we're glad to be joined right now by one of Jason's colleagues over at Scout.com, national recruiting analyst Greg Biggins joins the show. It's Jared and Jason. Greg, how you doing today?
Fellas, how's it going? Jason Jewell.
I'm doing great, how Greg. You? How you doing?
Good.
This will be a fun little bonding segment for you guys. You can I could step away, too, if you want at some point, Jason. You could just toss me to the side. Hey, Greg, let's get off the top. Arizona State in the news from a national perspective this week because top running back prospect in the country, Kareem Walker, is set to make his college choice. Arizona State is in the mix. Can you talk about Walker's recruitment, who he is as a player, and how much Arizona State is really in this thing?
I mean, he's a tremendous player. You know, he's a five-star guy back east. I haven't seen a lot of him personally, but I just watched this film. I mean, he's the total package of just, you know, size, speed, toughness, skill, level, hands. I mean, he kind of checks off every single box that you could want. Right now, I do believe ASU has a legitimate shot. I think a lot of people are kind of pointing to Michigan as maybe the likely destination, but ASU's done a great job recruiting him, and we'll find out in a couple of days. I want to say the 19th is when he's going to announce. I could be off by a day or two, but I know it's going to be this week for sure. But I think ASU is right there, probably in his top three, but you know, I got to watch out for Michigan right now.
Now, Greg, you know, Jared and I, we cover the local recruits. You know, we think ASU is doing a good job with the local guys, getting N'Keal Harry, getting Chase Lucas, and Marshall Nathy. But you know, for our fans out there that listen to the show, talk about ASU on a national level. Who else are they recruiting out there? That guys that aren't local but are getting highly regarded.
Yeah, I mean they're doing well. It's a really good class. Obviously, they recruit Southern California really heavily too, as well as the state of Arizona. Look at their class. You know, their O-line class is really strong. You know, last night picked up a couple of top JUCO guys that can come in and potentially contribute early. You know, Tyson Rice is a kid I like a lot. His younger brother's, you know, one of the top quarterbacks in the 2018 class out here. But look at Tyson's film. I think he's a talented guy. Oregon had just offered him. They were kind of starting to roll in for him, but he really liked ASU a lot. A.J. McCollum is viewed by some as maybe the top JUCO center out there. Both these two guys at least will come in and be in the two deep. You always want to kind of balance out the classes, and you know they were a little bit light in the junior class. So I think getting those two guys was big. But a guy I saw just recently, Cole Cabral, another lineman. I know you love those linemen too, Jason, so I got to throw the linemen some love. You know, Cole's a kid who committed to ASU over USC early on. I think a lot of people, you know, thought local guy, local offer from SC, that might be kind of tough to turn down. But you know, ASU does a really nice job of connecting with those kids early, recruiting them heavily, and then able to, you know, close on them. And obviously this year, more so than ever, we're seeing them do some work in-state. That's always been the issue. Some of the top guys have always wanted to leave. Even, you know, talking about, you know, the Christian Kirks and the Priest Willis's and the Kyle Allens. But getting Harry was huge. Getting Chase Lucas is huge. Obviously, there's one more guy out there, Byron Murphy. I know you know him really well, Jason. So if they can land Byron, that would be absolute icing on the cake. It's going to be a really, really good class for them, I believe.
Greg Biggins joins us, the Scout National Recruiting Analyst. It's with Jason Jewell and Jared Cohen here filling in for Brad Sesamat. Let's switch over to U of A, and there was so much talks nationally about Coach Rich Rodriguez and whether he was going to stay or go. It ends up ultimately that he stays. I'd love to talk about how that kind of coaching turmoil could impact a recruiting class. And a second part of that question, how is their class looking going into next year?
Yeah, so talking about Coach Rodriguez, you know, I think when that was going on, it does kind of make you doubt just a little bit, question a little bit. You know, if you're a coach, and the thing with the coaching change, not a coaching change, but I've always said this, a rumor coaching change is worse than the coaching change itself. Just that not knowing exactly what's going on just kind of puts that doubt in your head. And specifically with Rich Rod, no one really knew, okay, is he interested? Is he not interested? Is he interviewing? Is he not? There was just some doubt of what's going on. Was he offered the job? Was he not offered the job? Eventually, it turns out he was offered and said no. So I think the concern moving forward is, and they'll have to deal with this with other schools negative recruiting them, is, okay, look, he interviewed for a job this year. You know, he said no, but what about next year? And what about next year? So that's always going to be the concern that other schools will bring up. Hey, our coach is good, but you know, your coach is looking around. Whether that's completely false or not, that's what schools will throw at Arizona kids. So I think it's good that he's staying. I think he's doing a very good job. That staff does a phenomenal job. Every kid I talk to, ask them specifically about Arizona, the first thing they say is family. It's just the family feel, the family connection that you get there at Arizona, unlike maybe any other school. I think talk to a guy who visits five schools. Arizona's the one school they seem to say, you know, the coaches and the players have this special bond that I haven't seen. You know, Michael Elatise, talked to him just yesterday. He's our top guard out west. He took his visit out there. He's hit every school once, this guy. He's rock solid. Really likes them a lot. The guy that you got to really watch out for right now is Khalil Tate. He might be their headliner. He's a scout 300 kid. Arizona took him as a quarterback. Most schools like him more as an athlete. He turned down both USC and UCLA because they wanted him as an athlete. He took an official visit, kind of under the radar, over the weekend to USC. Didn't tell anybody. Didn't even tell Arizona he was doing it. Hasn't returned any phone calls. So he's kind of gone underground. And the talk is that now USC is saying, hey, quarterback, we'll give you a chance to come out here and play quarterback. So USC goes to Sarah High School. Sarah's been an absolute feeder program to USC. talking Marquise Lee, Adoree Jackson, Robert Woods, Rasheem Green. Those are all Sarah high school kids. Right now, Khalil Tate, kind of on that fence between staying with with the U of A or flipping over to USC. I know Arizona was able to finally talk to him last night. He wasn't, you know, kind of even returning their phone calls for a little while, but they did talk to him yesterday. I heard it went really well. So I think Khalil, he's going to be a mid-year graduate. So you might hear something staying or going in the next, I would say the next 48, 72 hours.
Interesting.
Now, Greg, just changing the subject a little bit. Now, Arizona and the prep scene here, I think the football has gotten a ton better. But, you know, we've both been doing this and working for Scout for quite a while. But the perception of the prospects coming out of Arizona, now there's one prospect in mind that I think is really, that really changed, and I thought that was Everson Griffin out of Agua Fria. But what was there a group of kids or was there one player in your mind that's really put Arizona football on the map?
Oh, man, that's a great question. You know, I've been doing it a long time, and I've always felt there was always that, you know, those top two or three kids from Arizona are just as good as just about anywhere else. You mentioned Everson Griffin, but, man, they always have, you know, those one or two guys. What I've seen, and maybe we're just getting better at finding those guys, but I think the depth overall, it's not just, you know, one or two guys. Now you're seeing, you know, 10 to 15 national recruits. I don't want to butcher it, but I want to say, was it 3 years ago when we had like five guys in our top 100 from the state of Arizona?
Yeah, that was Kyle Allen, Mark Andrews, Quaylen Cunningham, that group.
Yep. That was a good class. And obviously, you know, the Austin Jackson next year, early five-star guy with just unlimited upside as a tackle. So I think I've always had a lot of respect for Arizona, especially at the top of the board. But now we're seeing the depth at every, you know, all the positions. You know, quarterbacks definitely have it. Offensive line, you know, your boy Andres Pete. They've always had those two or three guys, but now you're seeing, you know, double-digit elite national recruits that can play for anyone out west.
Greg, thank you so much for your time. Really great stuff, and let's do it again soon, all right?
Sounds good. Anytime. Thanks, fellas.
Greg Biggins, Scout.com, national recruiting analyst, joins us here on the show. Interesting stuff on Khalil Tate with U of A. Could be some drama there, Jace. That's a big recruit for them, huh?
Yeah, huge. You know, these guys are trying to not doing as well in-state, trying to get some out-of-state guys to get that their ranking up in their recruiting class.
No question about it. That's Jason Jewell. He is also from Scout.com. I'm Jared Cohen. We're filling in for Brad Sesemat today. Coming up next, Charlie Regal, familiar face out here. Former Chaparral football head coach now with the University of Arizona. They got a bowl game coming up this weekend. We're going to talk to Coach Regal. That's coming up next. Again, that's Jason. I'm Jared. We're filling in for Brad on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. It's the Brad Sesemat Show on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. Going to be joined shortly by Charlie Regal, the tight ends and special teams coach over at the University of Arizona, the former Chaparral High School football coach. Also at Moon Valley. You know Moon Valley well.
Yeah, right down the street. I played at Washington High, Rivals.
Yeah, Rivals. So you don't like Moon Valley.
Well, I like their head coach, Sam Jacobs.
Great guy. Yeah. Great guy. Before we get Coach Regal, let's talk a little in-state recruiting, Jason. So from U of A's perspective, they have landed some good prospects from Arizona since Rich Rod has come in. It started with Cameron Denson. You also look at Trevor Wood. You know, he was really starting to build something. They got Justin Holt from Sal Point down the street, whose dad is an alum. But they really haven't landed the big names or consistent names locally here. So I'm going to ask you about that later, but we have Charlie Regal here joining us now here on the Brad Sesemat Show with Jason Jewell and Jared Cohen. Coach, how you doing?
How you guys doing?
We're doing good, doing good. Hey, let's get off the bat. You guys have actually had weeks off to, you know, just practice and recoup. How's that been?
Well, before I get into that, I know Brad's in New York, and I just want to know, did he bump his head? Somebody needs to check his mental status for letting you two guys run the show. I'm not sure what's going on down there.
He did, but, well, it's funny you say that because he's going to do a screening of the Concussion movie. So I'm wondering if he might have sustained a concussion, and he actually isn't going to talk to Will Smith. He's actually looking at a specialist. So
that might be true, especially with Jewel riding as co-host. We got some issues going on here.
Yeah, we're skating by here, Coach. We're skating by. Appreciate the boost of confidence. It means a lot. But
anything I can do to help.
Yeah. So hey, you guys didn't have a bye week all season. it must be nice, you know, still within season, getting ready for a bowl game this weekend to get healthy and to recoup a little bit, because this season must have just been an absolute grind.
It was. I mean, you know, and you don't want to harp on it too much because it sounds like it's, you know, excuses, and you know, that's not the game of football. You gotta play and play the cards you're dealt. So, you know, obviously catching the bye week the last week of the season after our regular season was over was something obviously that I wasn't used to, and I know a lot of these guys around here weren't used to as well. And then obviously going through the, you know, the amount of injuries that we did, again, part of the game, but certainly didn't make life easy on us down here. And now to have a couple weeks to, as you said, recoup and get a couple guys healthy and get into this ball game is going to be exciting.
Now, Charlie, I mean, I know you guys weren't playing games, but obviously you were still working, grinding in this whole recruiting deal. And I know you can't talk specifically about, you know, individual kids, but one term that you guys like to use is that OKGR kind of guy. Talk about that a little bit in your guys' philosophy in recruiting the kind of kids you guys want to bring in.
Well, you know, that's something that goes back, you know, a long ways with Coach Rodriguez to the time that they were at West Virginia. And it's pretty straightforward. You know, we're looking for guys that we feel, you know, obviously OKG are kind of guys that fit what we feel is, you know, that makes our program run. We're a little bit different. You know, I think guys that come down here and visit us on trips and take visits down here, we're pretty straightforward staff, and there's not a lot of fluff behind it. You know, we believe in that, a lot of blue-collar work ethic, but a lot of good guys, you know, and I think that we pride ourselves on working hard, but also treating the kids, you know, we say working them hard and loving them just as hard off the field. And I think there's a lot to that, and it takes a certain kind of kid that wants to, you know, be down here at the University of Arizona, be down here in Tucson and play in that kind of atmosphere, because we're going to coach you hard. There's no bones about that. But at the same time, when we walk off the field, you know, we're going to put our arms around you and tell you how much we love you and get you better as a person and as a player. And you know, not only that, but as you finish your career here, you know, that you're better equipped to go into the workforce and be a positive influence on society.
Coach, when you look at the OKGs that you've landed, you know, some of the maybe under-heralded players and maybe, you know, at Jason's company, at Scout.com, maybe they don't have them ranked as high, but you guys had them high. Who are some examples of some of these OKGs that have come in and have just been flat ballers for you guys that maybe have been unheralded to others?
Well, I think, you know, obviously when you ask that question, the first one that everybody's going to answer with is Scooby Wright. You know,
sure.
I mean? You know, I mean, that's an obvious one, but there's there's a lot more guys on our roster, you know, like Scooby Wright that maybe weren't, like you mentioned, a ranked as a 4-star, 5-star, or got the credit coming out of high school. You know, a guy that pops right out to me when he finished last year was Jared Tevis. You know, and he was here before we got here, but he's kind of fits that moniker and fit into what we do. Another guy, Jamar Allah. You know, Jamar was a kid that got recruited some out of high school, you know, and had a couple of offers, but not the, you know, Power Five, if you will. And Jamar has been a starter for us, has been a warrior for us, and been a heck of a player for us down here at the university as he closes his career. Another kid, you know, and I'm just kind of going off some of the local kids, you know, that some of the folks, the listeners might know. Another kid who I have a great amount of respect for and is going to finish his career for us on Saturday is Anthony Lopez. And again, guy that had some offers out of Mesquite High School but has done a lot of the little things that people may not see, you know, and has just been a fantastic kid for me on special teams and has played well on defense for us this year. Those are just to name a few guys that have come in and really answered that bell as far as the OKG moniker is concerned.
Yeah, the guy that comes to mind for me is Parker Zellers. But, you know, change the subject a little bit, Charlie. You know, ASU, you know, made some noise, you know, hiring a guy, Chip Lindsey, not too far removed from being a high school head coach. And you're kind of in that same boat a couple years ago. Talk about that transition going from being a high school guy to a Division I coach.
Well, I think that any time you make a change, I think it's difficult. And, you know, I just obviously, you know, human nature is we're all creatures of habit. So, you know, when we get into a routine and doing things, it becomes, you know, easy. It would have been easy for me to stay at a place like Chaparral where I had so many positive things going and really had, you know, pretty much could do what I wanted in terms of the football program, and the support I had from the administration was something you don't find very often. But, you know, obviously decided to make the leap here. And, you know, at first, it still is to a degree, I don't want to say struggle, it's probably not the right word, but challenging. Because when you go from running your own program and having some success, you obviously have your own ideas and opinions. And when you come in here, you know, you're starting back over. You know, I equate it to being the big man on campus as a player, a high school player, and then you go to college. You know, it's the same jump. You got to start back over and work your way back up. But the guys that I work with here have been fantastic. You know, the knowledge that I've learned in terms of just, you know, the college game and the game of football is the same, but just it's the day-to-day stuff more than anything else is something that you can't put a price on. And I'm continuing to evolve and learn, but it's certainly something that I am very gracious and you know, humbled by Coach Rod to give me the opportunity. But at the same time, you know, I certainly have aspirations and goals to move forward in this profession at this level. And hopefully someday in the near future, be in that position where I can get a chance to be a head coach as well.
It's Charlie Regal joining us here on the Brad Sesmat Show. Jared Cohen and Jason Jewell filling in for Brad. Hey, Coach, Brandon Dawkins, last time we saw him, he filled in an important role in that Arizona State game. And you guys were able to fight back to get back within one score a couple times. Did he really impress you? I know you do more with the tight ends and the special teams, but you do a lot on offense. Did what he put out there really impress you guys? Did it shock you guys at all? Maybe not shock is the right word, but surprised with how well he was able to come in and play? And does it make the quarterback position interesting going into next season?
Well, I think it was a pleasant surprise. There's no doubt about it. You know, any time you're the third-string quarterback, taking the amount of reps that Brandon has taken, obviously you know, to go in there and do what he did against our rivals was awesome. You know, and he got a few reps early in the year against Stanford and didn't do so hot. So to see him come in and play for the duration, you know, of the game and play like he did is, and certainly boosts our confidence in him and shows that, you know, we recruited the right guy. And yeah, to answer your question, as far as anytime you got a kid that comes in and makes plays like that, it certainly adds some intrigue to the battle in the spring, for sure. But, you know, I think when a new's healthy and a new's playing like a new does, I think that, you know, he's tough to beat. Obviously, he's sustained some issues, this you know, some injuries and stuff this season. But when a new's playing like he can play, a new's pretty good.
And finally, Coach, before we let you go, New Mexico this week and the New Mexico Bowl, what are your thoughts going into this game to close out the season?
Going back home for me. Sure. Back to the old home state of New Mexico, even though I grew up down in southern New Mexico. So it's neat to go back. Obviously, you got a hungry University of New Mexico football team that hadn't been to a bowl game in a long time. And they've done Bob Davey and his staff have done an outstanding job there, you know, in bringing that program in a few short years to you know, being a bowl game is obviously a testament to the job they've done there. You know, they're going to bring pressure. They're an athletic team, run some option stuff, some zone read stuff on offensive side of the ball for them, which, you know, we don't see a lot of that. So schematically, that's something different that we have to prepare for, which is always challenging. And then, you know, back on our side, you know, their defense is similar to what Arizona State does. A lot of pressure, you know, sometimes bringing six, even bringing seven and playing zero. So we've got to be able to protect anew and be able to win the one-on-one matchups. And I think if we were able to do that and sustain some sort of run game, I think if we're able to do that, you know, I like our chances. But again, you're playing at their place with a fired up and hungry team that hasn't been in a bowl for a while, we'll certainly have our work cut out for us.
Coach, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it, and we'll talk soon, all right?
You guys are awesome, man. Hey, don't let Jewel touch anything. Just let him keep – Jewel, your questions were awesome. You're doing a great job. I love you, buddy. But if you touch anything, I could see it all going to smoke real quick.
I'm just waiting to get these cookies over here. There's some hiding over here. I'm going to grab a couple.
You guys are the best, man. I enjoyed it. I appreciate you having me on, and keep up the great work, okay?
Great. Thanks, Coach. We appreciate it.
That's Take
Coach.
Care, guys.
That's Coach Charlie Regal joining us on the Brad Sesmat Show. Just love that guy. It's good people right there. Going to be playing New Mexico at the New Mexico Bowl this weekend. That's U of A against New Mexico. And And that's about it. Jace, you got any final closing thoughts for our venture here today?
Well, I was a little nervous going in today. Never done this, but went pretty smooth.
You're not even sweating. You don't have not an ounce of sweat on your the nice head of yours.
It was smooth sailing, man. You're the man.
Yeah, you. That's Jason Jewell of Scout.com. I'm Jared Cohen. You can check out what we do weekly with the Recruiting Roundup. Our latest one will be up later on, what's today? Tuesday afternoon, evening, something like that. Hopefully the editing machine works okay because we'll get it up sooner rather than later. Brad Sesmat's in New York. He continues to be off. It'll be me and Mark McClune, Eric, tomorrow. Mark McClune and I fill in for Brad tomorrow, so make sure you tune in. It's the Brad Sesmat Show on Sports 360 AZ and AZ Central Sports. Have a good Tuesday.